You are listening to the Political Periscope, a weekly podcast brought to you by Radio WNET. Interviews on international politics, security, geopolitics, economy, and more, every Thursday at 7 p.m.
Today's guest of the Political Periscope is Sergei Sumlenny, German political analyst, former director of Regional Office of Heinrich Böll Foundation in Ukraine from 2015 to 2021.
Political Periscope.
You were born in Russia.
Yes, exactly. I was born in Russia and I was a Russian citizen for the bigger part of my life. And I was socialized in Russia. I have graduated from the Moscow University. And I worked in Russia for a longer time. And I believe that is the reason why I have absolutely no illusions about what Russia is doing currently in Ukraine and what are the motives of this invasion. And that is why I'm sometimes so desperate about trying to explain my colleagues in Germany that what they're facing in Ukraine is not just some sort of misunderstanding one can solve with a good compromise with Moscow, but that is an essential aggression against our world and our way of life and style of life and our democracy. And here you cannot find a compromise. You first need to achieve a clear military victory, and after that discuss the framework of Russian capitulation.
So no saving Putin's face?
Well, maybe in some museum or in a jar in some decades. No saving of Putin's face, because like every compromise with Moscow, with Putin, is just time saving for him. Putin was never looking for a win-win game. He doesn't accept the very existence of win-win games. He always plays a zero-sum game, and any profit his opponent can get from any agreement, he understands that it is his personal loss, his personal cost. So in his way of dealing with any problem, there can be only his victory and humiliation of the opponent, or some sort of a deal which he is about to break. And that was all the deals we have signed with Moscow, starting from, for example, Minsk agreements, which Russia accepted only as a way to further undermine Ukraine and to reform its army and to gain more power and to increase German dependency on Russian gas. And any other agreement, if you look at them, they don't see themselves being bound by agreements, but they request from other parts to fulfill agreements. And after the opponent, as they see, like not the partner but opponent, has fulfilled all the obligations resulting from the agreement, Russia violates its own part and goes into a new conflict and offers a new so-called compromise just in order to win some time and to hit you again.
So what can we do now in current situation to solve this war, to end this war?
Well, there is one very easy way to end this war, and this end has been called Russia's defeat. And for Russia's defeat, we need more weapons to Ukraine, being sent to Ukraine, more heavy weapons. We have seen the results of sending to Ukraine HIMARS, these high mobility multiply rocket launch systems. We have seen that within some weeks, Russian offensive has been stopped by Ukrainians. Russians were unable to continue their offensive neither in Donbas nor in the southern part of Ukraine, in Kherson, Zaporizhia. And now Ukrainians very precisely and very skilled switched off Russian ammunition depots. And that is actually what nobody expected in the West from Ukrainians. Those people who knew Ukrainian army expected it, but the most people didn't expect it, that they didn't expect that Ukrainian army can be so skilled, that Ukrainian army can use this high-tech equipment designed in the West with that level of precision and of responsibility. We don't see any case of Ukrainian army hitting some targets which are not which are not seen as legitimate targets. They hit only and exclusively military targets with high precision, with high effectivity, and that is what they will continue to do. So we need to send more weapons to Ukraine. I would personally urge Western powers to send also fighter jets to Ukraine and surface-to-air missile systems like Patriots to Ukraine, so Ukrainians could protect their sky more effectively than they do it now with old Soviet systems. And if we do so, and Russia will effectively lose this war and we'll have to get out of Ukraine, we will have all the crises solved. We will have the food crisis solved, the hunger crisis solved, the energy crisis solved, and I hope we will see a regime change in Russia, because no dictator who has started a war and lost it could survive on the top of the political pyramid. And in this case, the man who has caused so many problems for the world and has put the world on the edge of the world war will just disappear. And that will be something which is good for everyone, including people who live in Russia.
How will look Russia without Putin?
Well, I personally don't care, I need to say, and it is clearly the question which should be elaborated by people who live in Russia and by nations who are neighbors of Russia, maybe first and foremost by the nations who are neighbors of Russia and have suffered from Russian invasions. I personally would prefer to see Russia demilitarized and denuclearized, because we have seen that one of the factors which encouraged Vladimir Putin and Russian military elite and larger parts of Russian society to go into this war was a feeling of invulnerability, the feeling that they can do anything they want without having any fear of retaliation. You can see it, for example, on the cases that Ukraine does not attack any target on Russian territory. Even although Russia uses military bases in Bryansk or in Kursk Oblast in Russia to indiscriminately shell Ukrainian cities like Kharkiv or Sumy, Ukraine doesn't strike back. This is being done by clear request by the U.S. to not use U.S. Originated weapon systems to hit Russian soil, because the U.S. has fear of escalation, and specifically nuclear escalation. If Russia had not had nuclear weapons, Russia would never dare to start several wars in the region, because they knew what happened to other countries who tried. They have been brought to justice by international community, but Russia thinks that Russia is immune because of neither nukes. So the first step which should be done after the collapse of Russian regime would be denuclearization of Russia, in order to allow Russia or the countries which will appear after to be parts of international community, to be seen by their neighbors as the countries which can be treated as partners, as reliable partners, and not as a source of eternal threat. So demilitarization, denuclearization, democratization, and most probably also regionalization in sense of allowing nations of Russia who want to be independent and free to be independent and free, because it's the basic right of any nation, the right for self-determination. And I think it will be better for any person who lives in Russia, even if they don't realize it currently, because if you think from the perspective, like, I deliberately exclude from this position the views like of Ukrainians or Georgians or other nations who have been attacked by Russians, because their interest is clear. They don't want to be attacked once again. They don't want to be killed once again. They don't want to live under threat. But if you think about interests of, let me say, a 50-year-old mother living in Sverdlovsk Oblast in some small town close to Yekaterinburg, for example, in the city named Asbest, 80 kilometers from Yekaterinburg, and she has her son, and the son has just returned from the army and has no job, and now and then he marries and he takes a credit for his wedding and he can't pay it back. So he goes to the Wagner private war company and signs a contract to go to Syria or to Ukraine or somewhere else because he wants to get good money. And in 2 months or 2 weeks, he comes back in a coffin. And this is a tragedy for the family. I don't say about the tragedy of the people who he killed or tortured or raped, but it is also a tragedy for the family. And this tragedy is caused by only one mean, because Vladimir Putin and Russia wanted to start imperialistic wars. And in the case of the Southern Urals Republic, or name it, or no idea, or free union or federation of some nations there will be no need to do it. And they can invest their passion and their skills and their time and their work into some peaceful activities and not in killing other people.
Don't you fear that if Russian Federation collapses, there will be a huge vacuum of security that China can just march in and stop on Ural?
I don't think so. The West had the same fear just before the Soviet Union has collapsed. If we look at all the Hollywood movies from the time, there were fears that nuclear weapons will go to the hands of some crazy people, or like terrorists, criminals, etc., that there will be wars. Nothing of that has happened. The worst thing which happened with a nuclear weapon back then was that nuclear weapon was given by the West to legitimate Russian authorities. Like, every fear in the West was that some, like, nationalistic criminal generals or terrorists or somewhere else will, like, get access to nuclear bombs. That's why they have taken the nukes from Ukraine, from Kazakhstan, and gave them to Boris Yeltsin. But in fact, Boris Yeltsin was the person who has appointed Vladimir Putin and has given him the nuclear bombs. And it is Vladimir Putin who is now threatening the world with the nukes. So our fear of security vacuum was absolutely a fantasy. It was hallucination. We were afraid that nations like Ukraine will attack Belarus, or like Uzbekistan will attack Kazakhstan. Nothing of that has happened. The only power who had provoked wars on the post-Soviet space was Russia. You think about Abkhazia, Ossetia, you think about Transnistria, you think about Crimea and Donbas now. Even in Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, Russia's interests were prevailing to ignite this war to that level. And that has happened because Russia was too big. Russia felt that it is some sort of a crippled Soviet Union and wanted to restore its power back. And none of the countries almost none of the countries, because of course there are some tensions between Armenia and Azerbaijan, But most of the countries which were created after the collapse of the Soviet Union didn't have these imperialistic dreams. So in this case, if Russia will collapse now, and no country which emerges on the ruins, out of ruins of former Russian Federation, if no country will see itself as a crippled Russia or crippled Soviet Union, then no nation will have its dream of restoring it, because you cannot dream to restore what you don't associate yourself with. Like Ukraine doesn't dream of restoration of Soviet Union. Even Belarus doesn't dream of restoration of the Soviet Union. They're happy, like Lukashenko is happy with his own borders. So from this perspective, the collapse of Russia will not create a dangerous power vacuum. It will, quite the opposite, will create the fundament for peace development. And regarding the Chinese expansion, if Chinese would like to, they would have expanded to Russia already by now. They have all the means to do it. They have way more people, they have way bigger army, they have way more money. They could have done it by now. I don't believe that they want to expand their territorial sovereignty to the north because it's too costly. They can control what they want to control, the resources, by economy means, by corruption means, by other means, what they're actually doing now, because Russia sells all its forest illegally harvested to China. Russia sells its gas to China. Russia sells other resources to China. So Chinese government is already in control of Russian resources. They don't need to expand their sovereignty with all the debts and obligations to the region and to provoke the United Nations. So I don't think that will be something which is worse than we have now.
And the Moscow, is it possible for Moscow to lose this imperial ambitions?
If you can't pay for your ambitions anymore, if you don't have resources to make them real, you will have to abandon them, not because you want to, but because it happens. Nobody in Austrian-Hungarian monarchy wanted to lose the empire, but the empire was lost anyway. Nobody in, other empires wanted to lose it, but empires collapse at the moment when the metropolis cannot afford holding it together. And I believe that the moment of the bankruptcy, both economical, political, and military bankruptcy of Russian Federation, has already happened.
Do you think those views, the views you presented, the dismantling of Russia, the dismantling of the empire to create a new security space in Eurasia, is this thought even present in the Western Europe?
I think that is the biggest challenge and the biggest problem, because the collapse of Russia is what many Western elites not want to achieve and are afraid to witness. And they don't want to think about it, because they believe when they think about it, they can ignite the problem for them. If they start like some think tank programs with thinking about what will happen on the ruins of Russian Federation, they will practically ignite these movements. But that is a wrong perception, because the independence movements, they appear on their own because people are not willing to live in the empire anymore, and they start to think about their identities. And if you remember the some months before the collapse of the Soviet Union, the Western politicians wanted to preserve it because they believed that the Soviet Union can be a factor of stability and the collapse of Soviet Union will be the factor of instability. You remember the speech in Kyiv, so-called Kyiv chicken speech, when the US president urged Ukrainians to stay within the Soviet Union. I'm afraid that is the case now. I don't believe we have in a German foreign ministry enough people or any people who speak Tatar or Bashkir or other languages of Russian Federation. And I think the day when Russian Federation collapses will be the day of huge surprise in many foreign ministries in Europe, especially in the Western Europe. And we will face this day completely unprepared.
I think that we can already see in Western Europe some countries for which the war in Ukraine is inconvenient, I would say, because it's the obstacle in relations with Russia. Do you agree?
Yes, we know that some political and economic groups would prefer to come back to business as usual with Russia. We also observe the process which we can call Ukraine fatigue, because this war is going already since almost 150 days. And many people look with fear to winter and think, okay, where will we get our gas to heat our houses and to run our economy? But all these fears are the consequence of the lack of strategic vision and of clear understanding what is our challenge we face. We face the biggest challenge to our world, to democracy, to peace, stability, security, international law. And we cannot say, we just pretend it doesn't happen. We cannot say, let's agree on something and compromise our values. Because this is the way to worse conflict, to worse war. And the wars, they don't ask you when you are in the mood to fight or not. When the battle comes, you either fight it or die or capitulate. You cannot say, I'm not in the mood today for a fight.
Yesterday, a commission in Polish parliament decided to ask Germany to rent their nuclear power plants. Isn't the current situation somehow a fault of German energy policy?
Well, I would say that the coalition government of Angela Merkel and Social Democrats in Germany, which run the country for 3 legislative periods out of 4 when Angela Merkel was chancellor, is directly responsible for the mess we are facing now. Many nations in Central Eastern Europe warned us Germans of the problematic character of the both Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 gas pipelines, and in general of the aggressive character of Russian energy export policy. But our government was telling all the time to Poles, to Ukrainians, to other nations that we Germans have business relations with Moscow since like 50 years, 40 years, and we have never experienced any problem, and we know better, and all criticism against Moscow is just like some paranoid Russophobia or something else. The current situation demonstrates very clear that our government was wrong, and Poles and Ukrainians were right. Unfortunately, we are already now in the trap. And we don't even say pretty openly in Germany that it is our German fault. So we even ignore the guilt of our governments for us having got into this trap. And the second step, which should have followed after we have recognized that we are in a trap, is to understand what can we do. And we cannot rely on Russian gas supply to get out of this trap, because it is Russia who closed the trap. And what our government is doing, they're trying to find ways to persuade Vladimir Putin to sell us gas and to send us gas. But that is not what you can politically allow to happen, because Vladimir Putin is the blackmailer, the criminal, who enjoys our vulnerability and who has created our vulnerability. To let him exploit this vulnerability is just to pay him back for what he has done. It is extremely wrong, and it doesn't help to improve our security situation because we leave the key to our energy stability in his hands. The right answer would be to find other ways of energy supply, even the ways which we don't want to have on the longer run, like nuclear power plants. I understand that many people in Germany don't want to have nuclear power plants for a longer time, but we can continue to use them for 1 year or two because the war is much worse than having run them for 1 year.
Why? Why don't Germany want nuclear power plants? It's something that we in Poland, we want them. We are trying to build them. We've been trying for many years. And we see it's cheap, it's clean. And why Germany decided to get rid of this, well, relatively cheap and clean power source?
Well, like there are different reasons why. Okay, first, the question of are they cheap is not that easy to be answered, because you have to calculate also insurances, and insurances are never private. They are normally state paid, because no private company would be ready to insure it, to sign an insurance police for a nuclear power plant, because in the case of catastrophic event, the cost will be too high. So the question of cost is and price is not that easy to be answered. But it is just like the technical explanation. I think that the main reason is much deeper, and the main reason is that in Germany we have actually a fear of technology. And we believe that technologies are something that can be so risky that the profits of brought by the technology can never be higher than the risks. And that's why better be conservative on the technological level. You can see it with many things, like starting from digitalization and German love to send in documents per fax, or the decision of German government, also by the Green Transport Minister back then in the 90s, to stop financing of the magnet-led high-speed train Transrapid. After all, Chinese bought this technology from Bavaria and built it in Shanghai, where it works perfectly, but in Germany we didn't want to have it. And other cases, like Germans were shocked by Chernobyl, Germans were shocked by Fukushima, but shocked to the higher extent than other European nations, because it was for Germans the proof of all their fears. They said, aha, we were right. This technology can create enormous negative impact, and it's better not to have it. Let's have all good coal plants and all good like gas plants. Although the emissions caused by coal plants effectively are much worse than emissions by the nuclear plants, but the nuclear plants are being seen as something like ultimately evil, because the nuclear waste is will radiate for thousands of years, because you cannot see it, because you cannot smell it, because we know that something terrible can happen and we can't allow it to happen. So here we have emotions meeting real risks and being confirmed by these real risks. And once being accepted as policy, and the Green Party, for example, is one of the leading parties now in Germany, and anti-nuclear movement was the fundament of the Greens since decades, even before the Green Party was founded as the party. It was the fundament of German peace movement and environmental movement. So we cancel it. We don't want to relaunch them. But I need to stress here, it's not only Greens. Don't you forget that the nuclear power plants in Germany have been proclaimed as something we will shut down under Angela Merkel, under the Conservative Party.
We know Germany's government attitude towards Russia. We know that the war is a problem for them. They would prefer a rather normal business as usual with Putin and the society. What does German society think of the war?
The vast majority of Germans are still ready to suffer financial costs, but to support Ukraine. If you look at polls now, we have about 65% of Germans who say we're ready to pay high price for energy, what we want to continue to support Ukraine. And if you exclude two radical parties who are very pro-Moscow and pro-Putin, like the far-right IFD Alternative for Germany and the far-left Die Linke, who are the descendants of the Eastern German dictatorship party SED, they both have way lower numbers. Like, I think at IFD it's about like 25%, at the Linke it's like 45 or 50%. But four democratic parties, three governmental parties and one oppositional Christian Democrats Christian Social Party, they all have definitely over 70% of their members who support the policy of providing help to Ukraine, even if it costs us some economic losses. I'm not sure this support is being granted. I'm not sure this support will sustain the winter if many Germans will not be able to pay heating bills. But now we have this support, and this is exactly the momentum we need to use to send weapons to Ukraine, to help Ukrainians to win this war within a month or two. Because if we lose the momentum, if we let this war to go into a longer frozen conflict, we will dramatically increase the chances for Vladimir Putin to blackmail us and to spread fears among our population. And we'll give him actually very good cards into his hands. And I'm not sure that in December or in January, the 70% of German support will remain to be 70%.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
This was The Political Periscope. The podcast is released every Thursday at 7 p.m.